Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Fans of Power Podcast, the only weekly dedicated podcast from He-Man to She-Ra and everything in between. And I'm Brian Ozone, and I'm always here with my guys, Joe Amato and Tyler Baker. What's up, guys? What's going on?
Pretty dig into some stuff here. What about you, T-Rex?
I got nothing clever to say, so let's just jump right into it.
Sounds good. All right, well, I was figuring that, you know, we've been doing this now for quite some time, and I figured we'd give a little backstory of ourselves to the listeners out there real quick about ourselves and, excuse me, you know, just let people know basically, you know, who we are and what we're about and stuff like that. And does anybody want to go first? Or you want me to start?
Who is Ozone exactly? Who is Ozone? Tell us about Ozone. And where'd you get that first? And then go ahead, tell us about you.
All right, well, I got the name Ozone actually from the town where I was born. I was born in Ozone Park, New York. I used to work in a club in New York City, and that's where I got Brian Ozone, because that was kind of like my my club name. It was Brian Ozone,
and
it just
kind of
stuck. Yeah, you know, it just kind of stuck, and I just used it as my Facebook. It's kind of like my alias, you know, and so that's basically where that's from. And I'm a plumber by trade. That's where I get all my Ozone cash from. They say doctors and plumbers make the most money, and I didn't have money to go to school, med school, so I became a plumber and made a lot of money doing it, and still am. And I've been an avid Masters collector now for maybe the last 15 years. I've been buying and trading stuff like crazy.
Who made you get back into it? I mean, for like you to start, you know, doing the mega collecting or something. What sparked it? The MYP came out in 2000X or what?
Yes, I had an ex-fiance/girlfriend. She used to work at Target, and she knew I liked He-Man, and she brought me home the Skeletor He-Man 2-pack. And I said to her, I said, that's the worst thing you could have ever possibly done. And she said, why? And I said, now we will be going every weekend or weekday or every minute possible until I get them all. And we did. And she basically turned me back into the He-Man collector that I am again today. So that's basically how I got back into collecting He-Man. And I've never turned back since that day. And other than that, yeah, I'm a father of two. I got a 7-year-old son, a 3.5-year-old daughter. I've been married for 6 years. Other than
you, married with children?
Married with children. I tell that to everybody. I'm the modern day Al Bundy. Honestly, it's funny. That's exactly how I tell everybody.
Except you got money, unlike Bundy, who ain't have no money. But.
Yeah, but I do collect. I'm a big collector of He-Man and She-Ra. Other than that, I'm a big Batman collector. I collect here and there Transformers. I love Thundercats. I have all the new toys from the new reboot of the Thundercats. All the new Bandai stuff. I got all the new.
Are you an old school? Are you an old school wrestling fan like Tyler is?
Of course. I've been a wrestling fan my entire life. I was a big ECW fan. They used to call me Jester Dudley because I used to dress up with one of the Dudleys gave me his glasses, and then I used to wear a Jester hat. And you'll see me in a lot of the videos. I'm in.
You still got those Dudley glasses I'm taking, right?
I don't know. They might be somewhere. I'm not sure.
But
I used to hang out with the guys, go to the strip clubs with them after the matches and stuff. And, you know, I used to go up and down the East Coast with them. Yeah, I mean, you know, I was big into wrestling, and then with my son is a huge wrestling fan, so I got back into it with him with the WWF, well, WWE, but I still call it WWF. And other than that, I mean, that's pretty much it for me. That's my story. I mean, like I said, I collect Batman. I'm a big Boba Fett collector. I collect a lot of Boba Fett stuff. But most of my money goes towards He-Man and Masters of the Universe.
I think most fans can tell. They see your stuff. They sure can see.
Yeah, that's basically where all my money goes to, other than bills.
All right. Well, what about Tyler? Tell us about you, Tyler.
Well, I come from a long line of bon vivants, man. I'm like a man of mystery, and I, you know, I enjoy surfing, candlelit dinners, and Tolstoy.
Is that from a movie?
Actually, as a matter of fact, it is from Jim Carrey's first film, Once Bitten.
Oh, dear God. Wow. I haven't seen that movie in years.
Oh, what? Man, but it's a great movie to watch when you're hitting puberty. I'll tell you that right now.
I do remember that.
A little bit fantasizing about trying to make it with an older woman, whether she's a vampire or not, is beside the point. But I guess to kind of follow the groundwork that Brian laid, I've collected He-Man since I was 3 years old, even through the popularities of Turtles and Power Rangers and anything else that was popular. I would still collect it or still watch it, but I'd still be trading my current toys for He-Man toys with kids at school. If I saw somebody with, I remember a kid in second grade came to school with a He-Man, the first 10 lunchbox with He-Man fighting Skeletor and Beastman.
Oh, that's
thinking, oh my gosh, like Greg Cobbs has got a He-Man lunchbox, and I'd never had one before. So it was always there. I'd still be renting videotapes at Blockbuster Video or some of the local chains of video stores. You know, wherever I could find them, I'd still be renting videos along with current movies that were coming out and stuff like that, or current video games, and going to flea markets looking for whatever I could find He-Man related. And I think I really got into collecting seriously about fifth grade. This is more than just it was like unfinished business, as I always like to put it. Like, there's episodes I never saw, figures I never owned, vehicles I never owned. So I'm like, I'm not going to stop until, and then of course the internet comes along, and then, you know, opens up a whole new world. So it's,
yeah, you see a bunch of stuff that you never even knew about or saw.
Yeah, never knew that it was a Hero prototype, or I didn't even know the Horde Trooper had been made until I went to the old Adam Tyner website back in like late 90s. Yeah, I had a friend in elementary school told me Dragstor was the Horde Trooper they made, so I for a time thought, oh, okay, I guess this was like some sort of interpretation of the Horde Trooper.
Oh, wow.
Thundercats, and a big fan of 80s action figures from G.I. Joe, Bionic Six, Brave Star, Silver Hawks.
Oh, Bionic Six, yeah, I had Silverhawks too, yeah.
All that stuff has always been near and dear to my heart, and Thundercats, Turtles. Thundercats, I've always held in such high regard, right below He-Man. But along with that stuff, I'm a big movie connoisseur. I collect vintage movie posters, original movie posters.
Just a movie connoisseur in general. I mean, especially good things from the 80s, as we could tell, and 90s, but because you really can quote and memorize a movie that.
Definitely. Yeah.
Well, yeah, if you know, I study a lot of movies. I did a lot when I was a teenager because I was one of those kids that grew up watching, you know, the staples of the 80s, and then my dad would introduce a lot of action movies to me and my brother. You know, that's how I got to watch and, you know, really get to know Arnold and Stallone films, Chuck Norris films, Van Damme films, along with mob films and other action movies and good comedies like, you know, The Burbs and The Jerk with Steve Martin and stuff like that.
That's a great movie.
I'm just a big movie connoisseur. I'm a big Jaws fan, big original Ghostbusters fan. You know, Predator's my favorite movie of all time. I could go on and on about movies and stuff like that, but I hold the He-Man live action movie in its own league of its own. Like, I I kind of hold it away from like my top five films of all time. But you know,
it's a great movie, man. It's definitely a great movie. I mean, you could dissect that in so many different ways, you know.
Oh, I do. Anytime I watch something like that, or The Thing, or the Alien films with my dad, we'll sit and just have so many different conversations dissecting things that were in the background, like what if scenarios and stuff like that. So
that's cool.
And I love professional basketball. It's the only sport that I follow. It's the only sport that I care about since 1997. So
big
old school wrestling fan. I've tried to watch current wrestling multiple times over the years, and I got out officially after watching Nexus get squashed by John Cena. I'm like, I'm sick and tired of new heels being booked to lose all the time. And so that's what I said. All right, that's it. I'm done. I've tried watching this multiple times. There were some highs and but more lows. And I just, if I watch any wrestling, it's going to be something from the 80s or early 90s of professional wrestling. So, but I have a great affinity for, you know, the like Hulk Hogan, Warrior, Jake the Snake, Piper, Demolition. Right. Yeah, you know, DiBiase, Mr. Perfect, so on and so forth. So, those are pretty much you know, a lot of my interest. I could go on and on and on, but we don't have time for that. So,
it could be a whole podcast in itself.
Oh, yeah. Sure could.
All right,
Joe, your turn.
All right, I was born a poor black child. Where did that come from, Tyler?
Oh my gosh, Joe's gonna stay that color.
Am I gonna stay this color? Oh my god, the jerk! That was great.
I can't imagine how many times Joe wakes up in the middle of the night hearing something on the radio and just starts dancing and snapping his fingers, and his parents are just staring at him.
What a movie! What a way to open a movie when Steve Martin said that. He said, "I was born a poor black child." I was like, "What?" And then that movie comes on, and then when you know his mother, you know it was Mabel King, or you know when she, you know, adopted mother, whatever. But when she was sitting there, she's like, "Nathan, I got to tell you something. You're not our natural born child, or whatever she said. I think she said you're adopted." He's like, "You mean I'm gonna stay this color?" Oh my god, that part just, God, did that kill me? That jerk.
I used to say it to my brother because he was really into rap for like the longest time, and I said, "Derek, you're gonna stay this color." I usually just make fun of him a lot for being so much into rap.
Great movie. But, yeah, as for me, sure, I mean, Masters of the Universe started when I was just a kid. When I was, like, God, I don't know, 5-6 years old. When it first came out, I was there for it. And it just, I mean, it just drew me in. I mean, from the figures to the art and everything. To look at that, it's like, you never seen kids obsess on art and packaging. Usually you get a toy, you just ripped it open, you throw it away. But now with He-Man, you looked at that and you're like, wow, that is a cool piece. And who saves art? But you did with Masters, unlike a lot of other toy lines. And so, right. I mean, I was just sucked in. And yes, it was stuff I would get for, you know, my birthday and Christmas. And, you know, if I could save and scrounge any little bit of money that I could collect, I would use it to buy something. Because we'd only get one of any figure or anything we had in the house. Because we didn't have expendable money to where if something got broke, it's like, oh, let's go buy another one. No, you just had that one. It was gone. That's it. So I used to, like, protect. Oh, see, the dog's going crazy. You got right there. But, I would protect
my crazy dog.
Yeah, I would protect it like it was the biggest.
Yeah, I was the same way, man. I mean, you know, you cherished what you got, you know. Back, yeah. I don't know. It just must have been a thing of the 80s, too, is because, you know, our parents worked so hard. And, you know, it's, you know, I don't know. It's kind of different with my kids. They don't have the same respect for their toys as we did.
Kids nowadays, it is quite different. But yeah, I mean, back then, I mean, there was plenty of people I knew that, yeah, they would, if they bust something, they'd scream to their parents enough and they got another. But I knew not to do that. So I protected them. That's why I kept every piece for my collection, and I still have it to this day. But so, sure, I mean, I grew up with Masters of the Universe and wrestling. Sure, I mean, I loved wrestling. And when the Ultimate Warrior came around, it was like, this guy was like a living action figure comic book character. I mean, it was just something about him, the intensity this guy had with his music, his persona, his look, running to the ring. I mean, I'd freak out when that guy would come. So, I mean, wrestling was always a great thing. And of course, with Macho Man, Hulk Hogan, and Demolition. I love Demolition because
they have an awesome theme.
Oh, I loved that theme song for Demolition.
I like to be able to just walk anywhere with Demolition's theme playing behind me, you know, where I'm going to the grocery store and Demolition's playing.
So freaking cool.
Yeah, that theme music.
Yep, that, here comes the accent, here comes the smasher, but that was some funky music. I always loved something funky. When it had a cool beat, I would get into it. You know, just like with TV shows, right. There's certain shows that would draw me in, some that would just put me to sleep. I mean, like, there was like the theme to MASH and Taxi. My God, those things would just knock me out. I was like,
Taxi,
I do
show, it just, I love Taxi.
Well, that's
what, oh,
weird.
Yeah, I love watching Taxi as a kid.
Taxi to this, yeah. Day I can watch Taxi. I that was a good show.
Yeah, the show, I mean, I enjoyed the show, but I remember when I heard the theme song, I was like, oh, God. But MASH, that was double sleep. I mean, that's not
MASH, I never got into.
Yeah, that wasn't for kids back then. So I heard the music. Yeah. I'd see the show. I hated it. But then you'd hear something like the theme song to the Jeffersons. And I was pumped up, ready to watch the Jeffersons. It just got me excited.
Joe connecting it back to the jerk, man. He's just like, oh, man, there's something I can connect with here, man.
No, but I mean, it was that. I mean, who didn't watch the Jeffersons?
I didn't.
Oh, well, you didn't grow up at
that. Not by choice. I just didn't see the Jeffersons as much as a kid. I was watching Different Strokes and Webster as a kid a lot.
Oh, sure. No, yeah, those two. But, you know, like I said, there were just those little shows were on, and there's certain ones that got me just going. And then as for cartoons besides Masters of the Universe, Thundercats was the only other cartoon that I really got into. And it's still... I mean, if somebody out there can think of another one, I want you guys to tell me, because I'm not saying there isn't. But for me, Thundercats has the...
Silverhawks was good, too, man. Silverhawks had it.
Thundercats has the funkiest theme song. I mean, Silverhawks was supposed to be
great. You know what was cool about the 80s? The 80s cartoons? It was like all rock and roll, heavy metal influenced theme songs. And that's what I loved. Like,
The Thundercats, what's weird is... I don't even know if that was rock. There was just something funky. I got into like...
Well, there's definitely guitar in there, especially like the end thing.
Yeah,
like
it's definitely rock and roll influenced, without a doubt.
Yeah, it does. It has that, but it also had just a funkiness to it, just something that was just different. But I always love that theme song. That's my favorite cartoon theme song of anything. Is for the Thundercats, their intro. What's that?
What about Cops?
Yeah, I don't even know. I don't think I ever even seen that show or remember. Yeah. I'll be honest.
I can't be the only one. There's got to be somebody who's listening who watch Central Organization of Police Specialists, and then it kicks into that awesome music, man.
I never got it. I don't know. Maybe it's just me and my not liking of Cops. Maybe that was what it was.
Oh, Lord.
Well, I'm going to YouTube it when we're done. But so those are those things. And then so my second biggest passion – besides Masters of the Universe, is horror movies. There you go. It's Jason Voorhees. It's horror movies in general. But what 4-year-old, 5-year-old kid is watching Halloween, then going to Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street? I mean, I was just engrossed in this stuff, and it didn't freak me out. I wasn't sitting there having nightmares. It was just something about getting scared, and it got me into Halloween and freaking people out and trying to scare them and jumping out of spots and bushes and trees. But something about Jason Voorhees, I can't describe. That's why Demolition, I think, the tag team, I got into them because they're wearing a Jason mask. But the thing is...
You're like Corey Feldman in Part 4.
God.
Yeah. That was cool. I liked him. He's sitting there. He's playing Zaxxon. He's making masks. I mean, the Friday the 13th, like I said, they're great. But I think the reason they mean something to me more is they were at a time when my parents were still together before they got a divorce. And I remember every time we'd go to a drive-in, there was a Friday the
13th. Wow.
Yeah, we had drive-ins. And there was
we don't have those in New York. Those things were gone way before I was born.
Oh, yeah. So we had those, and we'd always pass like a real long woods or forest before we got to the drive-in. And they had just one movie, and it was usually the Friday the 13th one we'd see when it came out at night. And my brothers and sisters are sitting in the back seat, and I'm sitting in the front, and I'm sitting between my mom and dad. And they both have their hand on my shoulder as I'm watching the movie because I'm freaked out. But I'm also feeling safe because they're holding me. And so, like, when Jason's scaring me or freaking me out or something, they're there. And my brother and sisters, they'd fall asleep in the back seat. And I'm the youngest.
You fall asleep during a Jason movie?
Well, that's the thing.
Really.
And they're older than me. they're older than me, and they fell asleep, and I'm the youngest, and I can't stop taking my eyes off the screen. And on the way home, that was the scariest part for me, because we went past that forest, that long stretch of woods again, and I kept thinking Jason's going to pop out of them woods, so I always had to turn and look another direction. But I think that's why it stuck with me, is it's a horror thing that meant something to where I like being freaked out, but it was at a time when I remember my parents being together, and I think that's a mental thing too. So
yeah, it's a cool memory.
Yeah, so that's why that stuck with me. So that's all that stuff that I liked, and then of course, you know, grew up playing video games. I placed in a lot of contests and tournaments, you know, and things around the world as where I placed, like in a Spider-Man contest, Sonic Adventure for the Dreamcast. I mean, there was a lot of games, but that could be a whole nother podcast. And I got a lot of prizes that I still have and documents, in case people thought Joe was making this up. I have all these things. I became a real great video game player. And then when I started working in a factory, that place, it sucked the living life out of me. So I quit playing games. I just basically went to work, came home, eat, sleep, fall, go to sleep. I would repeat that. And that was 10 years. This place closed down. And when I was actually praying it would go bankrupt. Well, sure enough, it did. This place went bankrupt. And then I was stuck thinking, what am I going to do? And I never made customs before. That's not something I did. But it was at a time when I was going online and checking for He-Man stuff, and I seen people making custom figures. I said, you know, I've never done this stuff, but I would love to try it, because I know hundreds of characters that were never made from the cartoon, mini comics, and everything. Right. And so I made
Imp. Good thing you did. You're good at it.
Yeah, well, thank you. And like I said, I've taught myself everything. I've never took any classes or anything. I had to keep learning. And I'm still learning. I'm still not perfect.
And not for nothing. I mean, you go the extra mile by making the card backs and stuff like that too. Like, you know, most people just actually make the customs of the figures. They don't even do the card backs, and that's a whole other entity of it. You know,
because I wanted to give them. You're right. I wanted to give them a whole experience, and I even had to learn that myself. I had to find the exact right card stock, the paper, the everything.
Yeah,
and
sure. That's got to be tough in itself. You got a photo. What'd you have to do? You have to learn how to Photoshop.
I had to learn to Photoshop. I mean, everything I had to just learn myself. But like I said, the first custom I made was Imp, and it was terrible looking. I mean, it was horrible. And I made this, I put it on eBay, and it sold, I think it was about $70. And I said, you know what? I really want to take this seriously now. I want to really learn how to try to refine and do this better as I go along. And I have. And what's weird is the person that I sold that to, he wanted me to make every form of Imp. He said, before you send that Imp, he said, can you make all his 22 forms? And he said, and send that with me. Yeah. So my first customs was that Imp, and then making every single form. Well, as I was doing all the other forms, I was learning more techniques. As I was doing, I was like, wow, I'm picking this up. Picking this up. And after I did them all, I looked at the Imp I did, and I was like, I can't give that to this guy. This looks horrible. So I sculpted a new Imp that looked better, still not the best in the world, but looked better in the first. And I said, tell you what, bud, I'm going to give you that one to go with your other Imps. And he's like, well, man, that's a cool gesture. So what's funny is, because of that, I still own that first original Imp that I ever made. And I sometimes show people, because it is a hot mess. But,
it's a learning experience.
It's what I look at. I actually have it in my sculpting room as a reference to know where I came from, and where I am now, and where I'd like to still evolve and keep advancing with customs, everything.
Yeah, that's cool.
So that's me in a nutshell of, like, still collecting, you know, Masters since I was a kid to this day, and just trying to preserve stuff, and just trying to share the experience, like how we are right now, just doing a podcast, just fans. We're fans, we're talking, we're enjoying our experiences, and just like everybody else does, just to have fun.
Hey, Joe.
The only thing I just want to add is I'm also one of the biggest Nirvana Kurt Cobain fans you'll ever meet in your entire life. I think I own probably every concert that they ever performed live, either on CD or MP3 or whatever. I have, Sandy pretty much destroyed all my books and paper. Sandy destroyed pretty much everything that I owned. That was on paperback and magazines and Rolling Stones and stuff like that. But I mean, I'm probably one of the biggest Nirvana, Kurt Cobain collectors. They're probably on the face of the earth.
Okay.
I have a lot. So that's another thing. That's another one of my passions. It's pretty much split between, He-Man, Masters, and Kurt Cobain and Nirvana.
Okay. Well, there's another one popped in.
Yeah. I forgot to add that before when you guys were all talking. Right. It popped in and reminded me.
Okay. And T-Rex, you were getting ready to ask me something. What's up?
Yeah, I was going to ask you, is the movie The Wizard loosely based on your career in video games?
Wow. I love that. I loved that movie.
Freaking. I mean, I'm sure little Jimmy couldn't be sporting the Jason mask in the movie due to copyright issues with Paramount at the time and Universal being made by or Universal releasing The Wizard. By the time.
Are we going to call Joe Kevin Arnold from that one?
It's kind of like how Frank Dukes' career in the Kumite, what Bloodsport's based on, and like Wizard is like really based on the live, real true events of Joe Amato. It's like Joe Amato scored the highest score in Contra, the highest score in Super Mario Brothers 2. No way, man.
He's got the
trophies to support it. So,
I got those. I got a jacket, for it was exclusive for this Amazing Spider-Man contest that was on the Sega CD.
That video like, Armageddon?
That Spider-Man jacket, that was the second place prize for playing the Amazing Spider-Man on the Sega CD. You had to like go through this entire game, find all the comics that were hidden out throughout the game, and then save Mary Jane at the end. Now, here's the thing. Those comics were never in the same spot in the game. It was different every time. So that was the first time I ever played a contest. Now, I didn't take it super seriously, but I was like, I'm going to do my best. And I took a picture of the screen and sent in my picture. And sure enough, they sent back a letter, and I got the letter. It says, fill out this form. You congratulations, you won second prize. And they sent the special leather jacket of Spider-Man exclusive just for that contest to me. And that's one of the coolest prizes I own is that piece. But yeah, I remember The Wizard. Yeah, that Wizard was just a great movie. Got you pumped. I was like, seeing Super Mario Brothers 3 when that was in. I was like, oh my God, could you imagine playing a tournament and they debut a new game? But
so what was the new game that debuted in the tournament?
That game wasn't out yet, right? Before that movie was – when the movie was out.
Supposed to be like when the big reveal for Super Mario Brothers 3 was in the movie when kids saw it. Like, holy crap, there's a third Super Mario Brothers?
Well, they were already up to probably like Super Mario 7 in Japan by that time anyway, though. But, I mean, for us Americans, we were a little bit behind on that stuff.
It was just cool to see him playing Turtles and – And
I think Joe might actually be in that movie. I'm gonna have to Netflix that now and see if I gotta read.
Check it out on IMDb and find out all these fun facts. Like they interviewed Joe Amato but didn't give him credit or something like that. And
yeah, maybe they nicknamed him Sky High. Oh, I should have said that.
Or they interview Joe but then cover up his face in shadows and they dub it over with like this really deep voice. Just like a cops episode or something like that, or Unsolved Mysteries episode.
I actually had my name in print. I think it was in Game Pro issue. If it was two or three,
you were in Game Pro.
It took me years to get that. It was when Game Pro issue, the first issue of Game Pro came out. They had their little tips and tricks section, whatever you want to call it, and it says send one in. If we print your tip, you'll get a free T-shirt. You'll get your tip and name put in this magazine and blah blah blah. Well, I sent one in, and then sure enough, it was about next month. I got a T-shirt. I got a door hanger, and it said, congratulations, your tip has been posted in this, and, issue, I think it was 3, and so I was freaking out, so I went to, oh, Lord, see, that's them calling right now, I think they're calling me a liar, they're calling me to, hold on a second, let me just hit mute.
They're calling you to make sure you didn't infringe on the copyright. So, T-Rex, you have any,
Oh, wait, I'm back, I'm sorry, I had to get them people off, they can't interrupt me while I'm talking. So,
good.
So anyways, I went looking for that issue, never found it. It was the, believe it or not, the only issue I went to the store. Well, of course, that's when it was first coming out of Game Pro. I never found it. I was going bananas. I went everywhere. I could never find it. So fast forward, I don't know, almost 27 years later, however long it was, Tom Ace, another big Masters of the Universe collector.
Friend of ours.
Yeah, he's a great guy. He found that issue, and he just sent it to me out of the clear blue for free. So I finally got to see my name in print after all these years.
That's awesome. And
so that was cool.
You should take a picture and throw it on the internet. Throw it on throw it on maybe whatever, the Masters of the Galaxy page or something, on your page or whatever, just so everybody can see it. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, I might have to do that. So that's,
yeah, that's like that's I said, something cool. That's
my crazy nice story, and
yeah, so I think cool
that's all of us pretty much. Well, I didn't know how you want to transition, if you want to go to break, but you can let the fans know we are coming back with some Masters talk. But like you said, we
we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we're gonna we're gonna go into our usual Masters Universe spiel. It's just I figured that maybe we'd let the listeners know a little bit about us, since we've been doing it now for what is this, episode 39, right? Yeah, so I mean, it's about time that we gave you guys a little bit info on us and let you guys know a little bit about us. And so here you go, here's a little commercial about popculturenetwork.com. We'll see you in a few seconds.
You're listening to a podcast from popculturenetwork.com.
And we're back from break, guys. So today, our character spotlight is going to be none other than Cyclone, the guardian of the Anwad of Gar. So who wants to go first and maybe give a backstory, a little, something about him?
T-Rex, go ahead, shoot us off here.
Cyclone is my absolute favorite heroic warrior of all time. So I got a
more than hold a second, more than hero?
Yeah, hero is one of those characters that you just build up like this extreme fanfare for a character that never got released. But as for characters that were actually released,
Cyclone's cool. Cyclone's character. Yeah.
I had him as a kid, and I love the lenticular sticker on his chest. It was just so cool to see, like the solar system radar on his chest. The action feature speaks for itself. His color scheme was probably one of the best of the entire series, along with his original his design in general. Yeah. Definitely was a figure that I can say I played with a whole lot.
He was a favorite of mine as well.
Yeah, he's just an absolutely stunning-looking character. I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to find any of the good guys that have a striking presence as he does. He's just, with the rings around his wrists and his head and his calves, I mean, he's just an awesome character, and it was cool to see him in a lot of the marketing stuff. Like, I had, a set of Thunder Punch He-Man PJs, and Cyclone was on there with him, and I just thought, oh, so cool, because Cyclone's on the PJs. Just a character I just thought was so cool and didn't get to see in the cartoon until I bought the bootleg series and saw some very disappointing appearances with him, but it was still cool to see him in action on Filmation. It was very short-lived and definitely
have a big spotlight. He didn't have a spotlight episode in Filmation, did he?
No, unfortunately not.
He was just in one, I believe, right? Was he in one or two?
He was in Beauty and the Beast. He was in the beginning of that episode, I think, fighting some of the spider robots that Trapjaw made. I think they're attacking the palace, so he's up in the sky, fighting him. Then he's in here, there, Skeletors everywhere. He's got scenes and very brief, and I know he's got a cameo in the Christmas special. But I think it was just those two appearances. Yes. But very disappointing. He had a decent voice in the first appearance that I saw him in, and here there's Skeletors everywhere. But obviously he was given his due, a much overdue introduction in the 2000X series in the Mystery of Anwad Gar episode. So he I remember I was surprised when I first saw that episode, because when you see that shot of him hiding in the bushes, my brother was like, "That's Cyclone." I'm like, what? I just wasn't expecting to see Cyclone, in the cartoon, especially that early on in the series. So that really took me by surprise. And to see his action feature where he spins his torso and is shooting, rings off his gauntlet and firing, hurricanes off his wrist. I mean, it was just a
pretty cool threat.
Just an awesome, awesome character. So that eventually became my brother's favorite heroic warrior when he watched the cartoons. He was about he even took quotes that Cyclone said in the cartoon and put him on his binder at school.
Oh, really?
He took the weed bends before the wind while the brittle branch splits in two. Like, he wrote that on his on one of his school supplies at work or at school, and I thought, that is so cool. He's that into Cyclone and Triclops, so he
was a
popular character in my house for sure.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
Did he seem like? Did they give him a type of Asian thing?
A little bit, yeah.
I didn't want to really say he's completely Asian, because even though he's on an island, it's definitely Asian-inspired. He didn't come off to me as
somewhat of a feel or a vibe or something.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely kind of speaks like a wise Asian master.
Like a wise, you know, yeah, right.
Yeah,
they tried to give him that feel, you know.
And, you know, he definitely, I still don't think of him, and I don't like the whole... You know, I don't like the idea of tying Cyclone in with Skeletor. Like, they're all part of the same race because they got blue skin. I mean, don't like that. Right. I just like to think that Skeletor, you know, or Keldor.
I still think Skeletor is that demon from another dimension, and
that's how I look at it. I really don't. You know, I could take or leave the idea of Keldor even existing, but to sit there and say he's like the half brother and all that stuff, nah. That's like, because I like to think of him as his own person. I really don't even think that he... I don't even want to think that he came from a certain race, to be honest. I mean, you look at, like, the Venture's design with the radar system built into his chest. I mean, he just comes off like somebody... I mean, we look at the...
Just a unique character, kind of like one of a...
Yeah, I mean, he's got, you know, that origin in the I Have the Power Golden Books, where he's, you know, built by, created by Skeletor.
You know, I kind of like that in a way, meaning... At least then it seems like, yeah, he is definitely one of a kind, because remember, he was a circus performer called the Human Tornado.
Yeah.
And when Skeletor was, he had that one machine that he was going to turn things into like robots, and he had Beastman find a giant spider, and that's how Spidor was made, because then he used this device, and Skeletor needed more power, so he had to get the sword from He-Man. But of course, right. He can't wield the power of, you know, He-Man's power, but he was siphoning that to make Spidor even stronger. But within that, and when He-Man got his power sword back, then you see that it was used to change the Human Tornado into Cyclone. So I thought it was kind of cool that, you know, there you go. He is a one-of-a-kind guy. And even though we didn't get to see much of him as the Human Tornado and what he would really do, but we at least know he was a circus performer, correct?
Yeah, yeah. And I'm perfectly fine with that. And I guess it's never really been acknowledged as, like, canon for the character. I mean, I think people tend to lean more towards the whole Anwar Gar storyline because, you know, it's really the only time he really kind of got a lot of, well, that whole series. I mean, he was in numerous episodes and was teaming up with Roboto to a certain extent, or buddying up with Roboto. But
to play chess, yeah. The game, yeah.
But I really just kind of like to think of him as just like there's a lot of mystery to that character. You know,
he's a very powerful character. I mean, not for nothing. I mean, his power is ridiculous. He's kind of like Storm from Marvel. I mean, he can his power to create hurricanes or whatever you want to call it is something else. I mean, it's a force to be reckoned with.
He's just a human wrecking ball. I mean,
take out armies. Yeah, honestly, is.
I mean, because at least when you do see it in filmation, I mean, his hands and his body is moving. I mean, at lightning speed, just, you know, building up a tornado, which was the character's, I think, original name was Tornado. It's even mentioned in the Spike Horse Strikes minicomic. So there's definitely, you know, ties to that that idea. But I just think he's an absolutely wonderful character. I hold him up in such high regard up there with Lizard Man, Moss Man, and Clamp Champ as like my favorite heroic warriors. He's just and he had some good appearances in the 2000X cartoon, aside from his first appearance, the Roboto Gambit, where him and He-Man are teaming up to fight the little skeleton army that Triclops put together. And he really gets a lot of screen time to shine and put Teela'c in her place for being a brat and stuff like that. So that was great. And seeing him buddy up with Roboto, even though I didn't like Roboto's voice, when they kind of put them two together as buddies, I thought that's cool to see Cyclone and Roboto, two characters that came out in the 85 wave of the original line, is like becoming like, because I think you had like Ram Man and Manny Faces to a certain extent, Buzz Off and Mechaneck, you know, you had Cyclone and Robata. I was like, yeah, I could go with a duo of those two.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you. I have the red repaint of the 2000X figure of Cyclone, and I love it. That's my favorite repaint of the series. I don't know why, but it just to me, it just sticks out. It's just so vibrant. It's really cool. And actually, like, I would use him as a separate character, like his brother or whatever. You know, it definitely is cool to me. That's the best repaint I believe that they made. Yeah, besides Disco Skeletor.
Yeah. Oh, Lord, the Disco Skeletor.
No comment.
Did quite a few of those.
Dude, that's a joke, guys. That was a joke.
Yeah, he likes giving it to Tyler there because Tyler can't stand that Disco
Skeletor. If there were a time to start drinking, it would be now.
That's it. But Bill Cyclone, yeah.
I picked the wrong week to stop sniffing glue.
Oh, God, Airplane, yeah. Great movie. But Cyclone was, I mean, it was a fantastic, he was a fantastic figure when I first seen him back in the 80s and first got him. I mean, I love that spinning feature. Again, the lenticular.
He had a great feature.
Just like Tyler was saying, different. The lenticular sticker was so cool to look at. And I like the upgrade of the character in MYP, meaning, yes, he definitely got a different look. He finally got some time to shine. He had a different looking face and the way he spoke, which I loved. Because here's the thing. As much as I love the vintage Cyclone figure, do you know there's one thing I couldn't stand about that figure, and that was his face. The reason being, here, hold up. The reason being is I felt like Cyclone looked like He-Man. Well, here's the thing.
With Faker.
Well, yeah, because Faker's supposed to be a fake He-Man. It's not really a hypocrite. Faker is supposed to be He-Man. Now, Cyclone, no other figure looked like He-Man in the face except, like you said, Faker. So when Cyclone came out, I was like, why has he kind of got a He-Man face? I didn't like that.
I'm looking at him right now. His mouth is closed. Yes, there is I'm not going to disagree. He does look a lot like
He-Man. So picture me being a kid. As a kid, I looked at that, and it really drove me nuts because I was like, I love this figure, but I don't like his face. So when MYP came out and did have their Cyclone, at least it felt like he definitely got a different upgrade, and I didn't feel like I was getting another kind of snuck-in He-Man face. So
we could throw him down on the playground there in recess in elementary school if I knew you.
Exactly. So,
does it. The gloves are off.
That's right. I can't be the only person that really thought. Like you even just said, his mouth is closed. But yes, if you look, he does like have a He-Man vibe in the face. And it just felt weird to me because he was such a freaking awesome figure to play with. I mean, I'd have him spinning the crap out of knocking people out. So,
and I love how his arms were essentially, they had that ball, that kind of like ball and socket joint. It's probably the most articulated He-Man figure to have those kind of arms that can move.
A lot of different poses.
All around and up and down. I mean, it was...
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, we got you.
Yeah, no, I dropped the call. Oh, got dropped. Sorry.
Okay. No, but yeah, that Cyclone, you're right. He did have definitely more articulation and movement than the other figures back then. And it was what made him different is, again, his sculpt. He did have different types of arms and designs, and he didn't have all the same feel. It's like, just picture if his face was different. I mean, that would have made him even more special because he would have had definitely everything pretty much unique. Not everything, but pretty much.
I really thought like he was ahead of the times with the vintage figure, with the spinning like that, because I didn't see that in any other toy line at the time, I don't believe. Didn't Thundercats have something similar?
Top Spinner.
Spinner, but didn't that come
top
after?
Spinner, yeah. That was like, I think the second, the Berserker figures, I think, came out in 86, I believe. Right. Came out in 85.
So, I mean, Cyclones, you know, the way they did Cyclone was really cool. I mean, it was different. It was new. It was fresh, and it stood out. I mean, it was something really cool that they did. You know, it was really what Mattel did with that was really different, and made the figure pop. You know, it made him a lot better, in my eyes at least.
Oh yeah, no, I mean that's definitely true. And for since Filmation, we didn't really get any good backstory origin or nothing, and of course we discussed MYP. For all the fans out there, if you want to get your hands on that golden book, it's a vintage one. I Have the Power. it is a pretty cool little backstory to him and showing how he went from Human Tornado to Cyclone. So it's a shame that it's so.
Hey, maybe we'll do that next week too. So maybe you know, if you guys can go out and get it now, and maybe we'll do that next week. That book,
because it's underrated. Like I said, not many people talk about this origin Cyclone. Or you're right. We will talk about it because this book has a lot of cool little tidbits and interesting things that kind of happen
in
the
next and stuff in it. Yeah, that's how they answer everything else.
We'll maybe talk about that next week. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you guys can go out and get the book and you know, read it, and then you can understand what we'll talk about next week, so we don't spoil it for anybody. Like I said, go to Amazon, guys. You can get these books for a penny, 10 cents, and you're only going to be paying $3.99 for shipping. And if you have Amazon Prime, you get it the next day or 2 days, whatever it is. So I mean, it's totally.
Yeah, remember, it's I have the power. It's a golden book. I have the power.
Or if you want to, you can just hit Joe up on Skype and ask him if he'll read you the story to you.
There we go. Yeah, it'll be story time. I'll read it to you right on Skype, and there you go. You absorb it in, and you hear us talk about it. But, so that's Cyclone
in a
nutshell.
He's got some of the best card art, too. I will say this. Like, his card art with him fighting Battle Armor Skeletor. Stylish card arts, I think, of it's just one of those that – I remember that's one of those that stuck with me as a kid.
Who did that? Earl McCarthy or –
I believe that's who it was.
I think so too. Yeah. I believe that's who did that. Yeah. I enjoyed a lot of his back art, his card art.
Cyclone did have one painful, couple, but there was so many comics where he looked really like a hot mess. But we won't discuss those.
I don't think he looked that great in Spike Horse Strikes, like the mini comic that he came with, where he looks human, where he's got like a human skin tone.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
That did bug me as a kid. I'm like, he looks a bit goofy, and even when he's smiling and stuff, I'm like, I don't like Cyclone in this.
Yeah. When he smiled, that kind of turned me off. I don't know.
I think Caucasian skin. He had a Caucasian color in that, or
something. Yeah, he had that. It was in the Hordak mini comic too. He's got white Caucasian skin in that too.
God, that just it looked terrible. Yeah.
I don't like it. I guess I got something against blue skinned people other than Skeletor. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, we need to have him as
But you know what it is too. Back in the '80s, not everybody was related to Skeletor. You know, just because they had blue skin too. So
well, web stores related to him also. It was going to have a look at a character, a Cyclone and Skeletor. Silliness.
Yeah, they're distant cousins. You know, who knows? You know,
twice removed from Father's cousin's former roommate, and so on and so forth.
That's it.
Yeah. It's kind of ridiculous that they did that. You know, with MYP and everything, all the newer in inceptions of it.
All
everybody has
brothers and sisters sleeping in each other's beds.
Yeah, it's
like those Dawson's Rivers kids.
Yeah, what is it? Polygamy, it's called, or whatever. I don't know.
All right, that's the end of the Cyclone discussion. I think we should.
Okay.
What
is taking that one?
Oh, there we go. So that's Cyclone. Right. A good wrap up. Not every possible origin is, because I know in a couple other countries, I'm sure there's other things. And I'm sorry I got distracted by Sasha Banks' butt for a second. She just walked onto the screen. I apologize for that. Okay. So speaking of females, what did you want to go into, Tyler? What is a big, good episode of Filmation that you want to talk about?
Oh, boy. An episode that's near and dear to my heart, and it could be arguably my favorite episode of all time. And it's Evil Lynn's Plot. Written by Paul Dini, who did some of the best episodes, who go on to work on Batman the Animated Series and redefine that with Mr. Freeze and Harley Quinn and so on and so forth. But he definitely laid some good groundwork and good stories of He-Man. And Evil Lynn's Plot definitely has a lot of superhero undertones to the episode. And it definitely has one of the, pretty much, in my opinion, the only hand-to-hand combat episode of He-Man and Skeletor. Duking it out, it really. I'm
that
just kind of
power against power. Is that what it was?
Power. Oh, one of my favorite lines. Power against power.
That's definitely a good line.
It's just. I mean, we're introduced to the widgets in this episode, and you really see Skeletor portrayed is what we expect of Skeletor is done to a T in this episode, where he's.
I forget though. Is this the episode also where they use like the bat symbol, the He-Man bat symbol as well? Or is that a different episode?
He-Man that's the one where the Iron Cross symbol is established, the widgets use. Yeah, so that's just one of the many superhero undertones about the episode.
Yeah, that made me I freaked out when I saw that. I was like, holy cow, it's like a Batman reference. I was like, this is great, you know, because I'm a big Batman freak. I was like, wow, it's bringing the two together. It was amazing.
That was cool.
It's a great way of like getting He-Man into action, you know, other than the saving the farm boy who's Slotos pulling a wagon, the chain breaks, and they're just kind of He-Man or Adam and Cringer are just kind of casually walking around, exercising, just enjoying a day of peace. And then you see something happen. There's danger. We got to snap into action, just like Superman or Batman or Spider-Man would do. And they save the wagon from crashing. And then it's like He-Man says, like, we might find others who need our help today. Like they're on duty right now. And then they see the signal in the sky.
Now is that when the kid he's for Skeletor? Is this a different episode?
No. The kid that I'm talking about is just this farm boy who's he's got a farm animal called Slotos pulling a wagon. Yeah, and
That's a different episode. Sorry.
Oh, no problem. And to see Skeletor, Merman, and Beastman being, you know, very evil in this episode. Like, I mean, even though they get their butts handed to them by He-Man, but to go in and start intimidating the widgets, like just scaring them purposely. The way that the certain shots of Beastman's, like, half his face is shown as he's staring down the widgets, like, kind of growling at them with what they're there for, and then Skeletor comes down, looks down upon the widgets.
Oh, that look. I know the look you're talking about. That was, I think, in a unique animation just for that. He looked frightening when he
It always, like, stuck with me.
That was the greatness about the first season, because that's, you know, they made those guys, like, really evil and not goofy like they did in season two. They made them, like, you know, like they're supposed to be, like, evil henchmen.
And they were hands-on in that episode. I mean, just like you were saying, Tyler, even though, yes, you know, of course, they're still going to get defeated by He-Man, they're still hands-on, and they're aggressive, and it's just not in the background, you know what I mean, or being silly or dull.
No. I mean, these guys are out to
have a shot, you know?
And they're not afraid to do it either. I mean, the first thing they do is, like, Merman runs at him, you know, misses with the sword, and, of course, you know, it's the same animation from Diamond Red Disappearance, and then Beastman attacks with his whip, which is one of the few times you get to see the whip in action. I mean, just He-Man is just, he's enjoying it, but he's confident, he's strong. And it still gives me chills is when Skeletor's, you know, telling Kandu, you know, we want your cordite, you'll never get it. And then he's like, you know, snaps his fingers, and then Panthor starts growling at them. Like, this guy is just all about just scaring, you know, the piss out of these you know, little guys. And then
Panthor,
you hear this guy.
At least had a lot of screen time, too. That was cool to see.
Oh, yeah. He's definitely good. Yeah, to see Skeletor riding him and stuff like that.
You know, Yeah, it's good to see that he was showcased in that episode. Quite, you know, he had his spotlight on there.
He's good. Like, they really make good use of him in the episode. But it's nice to see a tease, because then you hear this kind of crunching noise and Battlecat stepping on Panthor's tail.
Yeah.
And it's just like, back off, man. And then He-Man's up there just like, you want to fight? I'll fight you, essentially, is what he's trying to say. And it's just like, it's an episode like, you want to throw down? You know, let's do it right here. You know, like, it's just, oh.
Right.
Just so exciting to see He-Man just jump right in there and take them all out. And then ends up destroying Skeletor's basher and just pisses Skeletor off. Like, you know, you've beaten my henchmen. You've destroyed my vehicle. You know,
I got a question, Tyler. One cool thing about that, when the Basher got destroyed, then a giant, like, it looked like Havoc staff skull or ram, like, appeared in the, like, destroyed parts of the Basher, but I don't think it was there showing. Was that something that was used any other time during the cartoon?
Yeah, the front of the Basher would open up, and a ram, like, kind of looks like the Havoc staff ram, would pop out. And I think the only time you see that is in Song of Solace, because then when they're trying to break open Grayskull, Beastman gets in it, opens up the hood, and the ram head comes out of it, which is why it's called the Basher.
So that was something like the Battle Ram Chariot that they made 2000X, like that vehicle.
There's just similar tones, but the Basher itself is used as, like, you know, obviously, you know, it fires, you know, rays and stuff like that, but is also kind of used as, like, a bit of a battering ram, whereas the Battle Ram chair is just, just kind of there as like a cool looking vehicle to carry Skeletor into battle.
Yeah, just wanted to give that good reference, because in case there were fans that watched that and wondered why was there a giant ram there, I just wanted to make sure you explained that to them. Okay.
But and then of course it just, you see Skeletor just furious with his evil warriors, like, you know, getting in their faces, calling them, you know, saying they're weak for not being able to beat the Widgets, and he doesn't want to hear that He-Man's the reason they lost, and Evil-Lyn and Panthor just, they're enjoying watching these two. They're loving every minute. They're laughing at him, and of course they get thrown out, and that's when Evil-Lyn kind of comes in and takes over the episode, and she pulls some Freddy Krueger stuff here, man, where she's posing as a pretty girl, and it's like a Nightmare on Elm Street Part 4 when Joey sees this hot blonde and turns out, man, it's Freddy Krueger, man. And
that haunted me. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and she befriends the Widgets and gets
Tell them about, like, that was what Evil-Lyn told Skeletor. She had a little plot to look like, somebody else to try to sneak in and gain the acceptance of the Widgets, or trust of them.
Yeah, she's pretending to be a girl that's lost her family as they were walking around in the forest. Right. Miss Nadira. Is her name, and she's being chased by Panthor to make it look like she's in danger, and of course they see Panthor, Skeletor, this is no good, and they throw spears down at Panthor to scare him off and get hurt, and she wins their trust by that, and Skeletor's all right, she's in the Cordite's mind, it's just a matter of time, and so you see her really sob it up to make it sound like she's scared she'll never see her family again. Of course, the Widgets, being the kind-hearted souls they are, like, we'll help Miss Nadira. We'll find her parents, won't we? And they go off, and Laura's mad because Squinch is all googly-eyed over Nadira.
Yep.
And so he tries to make her feel better by giving her some emerald jewels, and she starts asking questions about what's behind this door in their mind. And he's like, nope, sorry. And of course, she's playing to his vulnerability of saying he's strong, and he gets all blushed and everything. And it's fantastic. It's so good to see these villains not just using. Just really playing this up, because it's a great way of introducing the Widgets as the kind of personalities they have. And Squinch, you know, you feel bad for him because you know what's going to happen, and he's playing right into it. And he shows her that one lump of cordite they have hidden away in there. And when she sees it, you hear Evil-Lyn's voice.
Yeah, you hear the voice change from that pretty.
Oh my gosh! And you're like, man, it's just,
she knows what she's got.
You know what was awesome about that, Tyler? That moment, not only when she heard the voice, but when she slowly started transforming from Nadira to Evil-Lyn, how it was kind of like going back and forth with that animation. There was something so fluid and, for me, almost Disney-like. She looked like a Disney villain. There was something so great about that animation and frightening to see how she then turned into the, you know, Evil-Lyn.
Oh, I know what you're talking about, because, I mean, she's sitting there smiling as Nadira, and then she's leaning back laughing.
She looked like the evil witch from Snow White, sort of.
Or like Maleficent from the Sleeping Beauty cartoon, you know, where she's just really enjoying what she's just done. You know, I've got what I wanted, and I'm embarrassing this little guy, and it scares him off, and, you know, it's, and then it becomes the race against time to stop Skeletor from using the cordite to create strength just as strong as He-Man, and then it also becomes a redemption story for Squinch, feeling terrible that he just, you know, pretty much.
Skeletor even says, he goes, now I have the power. Like, he's using He-Man's catchphrase.
Yeah.
And the build-up for the climax is so, so good, because when Squinch decides that he's going to go to Volcano Cave and stop Skeletor, like, not with He-Man's help, he's going to go by himself. Like, the music that's playing, it's the same kind of music you hear in a lot of the episodes, but That's what good direction and good storytelling does with this stuff. You take this very good foreboding music and play it as like Squinch leaves, and you see the pan down of Volcano Cave where Skeletor's at, and He-Man and Battlecat are in there. They're just watching and observing quietly as like, what's going on here? And of course, He-Man's got alerted by Zoar the Falcon because she was aware of what was going on. But it's just so cool, the music that's playing, the lava's blasting and bubbling all over the place, and Skeletor's one of the coolest images of the entire series, of He-Man, She-Ra, is Skeletor trying to melt the cordite in front of the flames. It's one of the coolest. That's the picture I had Alan Oppenheimer sign for me, was the image of that, where he's, you know, saying, once, you know, I melted the cordite, I'll, you know, make it 100 times stronger to beat He-Man. Mm-hmm. And one of the coolest moments.
Paul Dini, he always did really good episodes. You know, he was one of the better writers for the series, I think. He did good with Masters.
He did. He knew how to write characters. And what's good about is the scene coming up is that the minute Skeletor is kind of really, you know, delivering his speech of like how he's really going to destroy He-Man, you hear this big bang, and I mean, He-Man's just bursting through the wall, and then it cuts to Evil Lyn making this face like, oh, crap. You know,
we're in trouble now.
Yeah, I mean, she just looks like, oh, man, like, this is not good. Like, this, the one time you see Evil Lyn that concerned, and she doesn't say anything, it's just the look on her face, and then...
Yeah, and it says 1,000 words.
Yeah, yeah, it's just so cool because of the what is actually going on in this episode. They're getting ready to throw down in this volcanic cave after He-Man defeats a rock monster, and it's just, you see He-Man and Skeletor duking it out hand to hand. I mean, it's just epic. It's just I'm talking too much. You guys need to get put in some input. I'm talking too much here, man.
I wanted you to go.
Listen, like, keep going, bro. This is your thing. You're the Filmation expert. You know, this is your thing.
Wanting to talk about that episode for a long time. I wanted you to feel it. I'm sure we were going to join in, definitely. But I wanted you to spit first. And you spit a lot. And what's cool is to see how it, in a way, part of it ended, because as He-Man was getting the best of Skeletor, and Evil Lyn was going to then try to, you know, add and help Skeletor, who then ties up Evil Lyn? Who pops up out of nowhere?
We got Candu, Laura, and Squinch just coming down and tying her up.
Exactly, to see, and then doesn't he even make some smart little remark about still calling her Miss Nadira? He even still calls her that.
Yeah, he's like, oh, we'd like to stick around, Miss Nadira, but as you seem to be tied up.
Yep. So yeah, it's cool to see Squinch he got a little redemption. But that episode was full of so many moments. I mean, you know, like even at the beginning when you see Merman climbing the walls, trying to get over the walls where, the fortress is for the widgets. And then here comes Beast Man, and he starts climbing up the walls even quicker because, you know, of
he
course
can't he's do it either. Beast.
Yeah, so he's going even quicker and starting to go past Merman, but you see them take some, like, hot tar or some whatever, or oil, and pour it down the side of the walls to make them fall, but you see that from the beginning it gets going, and of course then they will have to alert He-Man as he's out, like you said, as Prince Adam and Cringer, trying to have some peace of mind. That's what I mean. That's what's good about a secret identity. You know, if everybody knows you're He-Man all the time, I mean, can you ever be Prince Adam without the thought of getting killed? So it's good to try to have some peace and quiet. They're out and about, and then, like you said, that's when the boy's in trouble. The boy's walking with that, what was that creature called? That
Soto.
Okay, and it's dragging this wagon and the chain, and it bursts. Of course, Adam has to transform. He catches the wagon. But the cool thing you see, another overlooked moment of another thing about He-Man's power, is he then, with his hands, takes and forges the steel chains together. And they magically, like, bind back together. But you see He-Man people forget this. He-Man has another ability. Yeah. He welded, basically, magically, with his hands, steel back together. So that was a cool thing. You also, as we know about that cordite, what did Skeletor say? Because once he gets that cordite and it touches his skin, that he turns into a harness that touches his skin, he said it will increase his power 100-fold. To be as powerful as He-Man. So that's what I mean again. Why is He-Man so powerful and more powerful than others? It ain't just the power of Grayskull. It's because
it's the power of the cordite from his vest.
Yeah, the sorceress forged his vest out of cordite. So he not only has all the power of Grayskull, that vest is making him even stronger. So these are just little moments and little things that sometimes get overlooked that when you see, you're like, wow, no, okay, now I can understand why He-Man could be so strong and seeing other little abilities. But yeah, all together, the episode, like I said, it was great from that to the fights, to the one-liners, like we were saying with Skeletor saying, you know, now I have the power. And then the moment when Evil Lyn got He-Man's power sword, and she threw the sword to Skeletor.
Yes, that's a very exciting moment because he had to see Skeletor mocking He-Man.
He did his pose of the I have the power pose. Like, how freaking cool was that? So,
and then, then you see a shot of He-Man probably looking the angriest he's ever looked in the show because he looks like, you know, I'm going to rip you a new one now. I mean, it's one shot before they clash physically. It's just, I'm getting chills. I'm getting goosebumps in my face talking about this right now.
Yeah, you can see it in He-Man's face. He's like really perturbed, and like he's like, "This isn't happening. I'm gonna kick some Skeletor butt right now."
Yeah, I mean, you just this is what when people think of He-Man and Skeletor fighting each other. I mean, this is the one episode where I think it just really just comes down to, you know, just the two of them. I mean, yeah, Evil Inn and Battle Cat are there, but this is a He-Man Skeletor fight. You know, this is not. Skeletor's kind of, you know, off to the side commanding Merman and Whiplash to do this and that, and then he gets, you know, knocked into a pool of water and, you know, shakes his fist at He-Man or something like that. This is them two.
This ain't, you know, Cornball City. This ain't corniness. This ain't
goofiness. No, it's a serious, I think for anybody it's a really good episode.
For anybody that likes to doubt or make fun of Filmation or says they're afraid they couldn't get into it, that would be the episode to show somebody who would be like, I don't know. That came out in 1983. I just don't think I could like it or appreciate it. That episode would show you. It gives you everything that you want. It's written
It'll
by
change the doubters.
Yeah, I think it really would. It's definitely.
I think it would too. I think it definitely will. Because it shows the power of the good, shows the power of the bad, and you know, as always, the good prevails. You know,
and it's a simple story. It's not a kind of all over the place. It's a simple A B C story. But there's a lot of good personality in the episode. You see Skeletor's personality the way it's supposed to be, what He-Man is supposed to be, the protector of Eternia, what Evil Inn likes to do. She's there to support Skeletor and help give him what he wants. You know, the Evil Warriors are there as lackeys, you know, to try and kill He-Man, beat him up, whatever you want to say.
Hey, not bumbling, though. You know, not bumbling.
No, not bumbling at all.
Right.
You know, and Panther,
that's not until season two.
And of course,
Panther, and again, Panther is, you know, he has a pretty decent role in that episode as well. You know, unlike, you know, usually he's just on the throne and, you know, Skeletor's petting him or whatnot. He actually has a nice little role in this episode.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, to see him be a lot more aggressive trying to attack Squinch and just seeing him do a lot more than just kind of sit there one frame. It's just a lot of fun. The episode is just it's a great great action adventure episode that's got everything. I can't say enough of it.
It will definitely change the doubters. You want to watch a good Filmation episode, this is the one to watch. That it will definitely change your perspective if you think it's just a childish, foolish TV episode, you know, TV show. I mean, It there's a lot to it. There's a lot involved in it, and it's definitely one of the better episodes.
It makes you so bad, I wish that all of it would have been like that, including season two. I wish season two could have kept that type of tone.
And it could have been. It really could have been. And not just because Paul Dini wrote it, because Laird Taylor wrote some fantastic episodes. So did Doug.
He did write some really great episodes.
Robbie London, everybody wrote a lot of good stuff. And, of course, you got the parents up in arms saying this show is promoting witchcraft and devil worship and demonic possessions and all this other crap.
Fortunately, you know.
Yeah. But, there's enough there in season one to really, you know, whet the appetite of if you want a good sword and sorcery story. I mean, there's plenty there by a lot of good quality writers. And unfortunately, this is an episode that when people think, oh, great episodes, it's always Problem with Power or the Origin of the Sorceress or, you know, Cat and the Spider or just episodes. I'm like, no, these really just are. That's why I feel like I need step. It's like, no. The consensus should not just be a choice few episodes. I mean, like that really deserve like a lot of the fanfare because this is an episode that's people just overlook it so much.
One of the top 10? Was this in
sure,
the top?
No, 10? No. The top 10 was just a
no.
That was a. You know, I was so mad at the top 10 episodes that were all on that DVD release.
I would say three out of the top 10 belong there, but the other seven they or so they didn't deserve it. They for some reason they just, I don't know, for whatever reasons they put them in there. I don't think they deserve.
Yeah,
to
this
be in
one
it.
Especially with a lot of the information that we found out, especially about He-Man and his power, but just like a good episode.
Yeah,
for
and the Cordite, the widgets. I mean, all that good stuff. Even with the bat symbol, whatever you want to call it, the Iron Cross symbol. I mean, that's something that, you know, everybody should be aware of. I mean, it's a way of summoning He-Man if you need help. It's just things that needed to be, you know, for those who don't know, should know. And unfortunately, it didn't make the top 10. It should have.
No, the top 10 was episodes. I mean, like Teela's Pass was on there. Diamond Ray was on there. Evil Seed was on there. But, like, yeah. Quest for He-Man, you know, with Plundor and all that crap and... You know, Origin the Sorceress, which to me is just like, I'm sorry, I just don't think it was that great an episode.
The story was told over and over and over again in so many different episodes
and
anyway.
And it could have been good, but I just did not find the episode that entertaining. Cat and the Spider, I'm like, no, I don't like Katrina. I don't know why people like that character so much.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
I don't know either.
Webster's in it. That's fantastic. That sells it for, and so is Malaktha, but the reason people like that episode, I think it's all about Katrina, but
She was hot. I mean, I know she was like,
she's got like that Catwoman.
I prefer Maid Marian from the Robin Hood cartoon. She was pretty hot.
Well, she was. It was kind of a sexy cat kind of character person or whatever.
She didn't do anything for me.
Was that the episode with the Black Star statue in it or no? I don't remember.
I think it was. I think so. It's been a while since I've watched that particular episode, but no, Evelyn's plot is just—it's never mentioned. And of all the discussions I've seen, people talk about episodes or on forums and things. I mean, it's just most of the episodes that I've noticed that I really really like are not ever discussed. It's like a core group of episodes, and that's it. You know,
Watch it. Maybe we'll have to link it or something. We'll have to give fans a link to Evelyn's plot so then they could watch
it's
it. Again.
I'm sure it's on YouTube. It's got to be on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
buy it on iTunes also. If you want to buy it and watch it on your phone or iPad anytime, you can buy it for $1.99 on iTunes.
Yeah.
You know,
and plus, if you have the set, it's in the set itself. I mean, it's in any of the DVD sets we got. I know it's in the 30th anniversary set. I'm looking at it right now. It's in there. I mean, have every Filmation episode.
It's the first BCI release. It's in... I think it's in the Best of Season 1, Volume 1. There's multiple ways to watch it.
If you got a VCR, you can pop in old episodes and watch it on VHS.
Oh, yeah, and I can even tell you, is on volume 10 of the VHS tapes. I'm holding it right now.
And you bet he knows, because that's how T-Rex got really into him. Boy, he has all them things from back then.
And that was the first VHS tape I ever bought as a kid. I bought a used from Beyond Video. That was my first.
Tyler, are you going to get the Three Curses on VHS just for the hell of it, or
I'd like to when I've got the money for it, because with bills and stuff like that, I'm kind of like dried out at the moment. I had a friend of mine
As soon as I heard they were making it on VHS, I thought of you. I figured you'd definitely go.
But when
for
I
it.
Saw that, I'm like, yeah, I need to have it. It's just a matter of getting some extra bucks to spare.
They did everything to the T. I mean, the same
font. When does it come on iTunes? Isn't it available on iTunes also?
I think next month it's on iTunes.
I thought it was
August
this week.
1st? August 1st or 4th or something. I know it's
Maybe it's this week. Yeah, yeah. Oh, we're in August. I forgot. Yeah, it should be up already. But it's also on Masters. It's on the Masters of the Galaxy page. If you go on there, it's on there.
Okay.
Yeah. I got to have the hands-on copy, though, with the RCA Columbia. Yeah. You know, format box
cool.
And all that stuff.
Yeah, actually, the person who took the footage of it, it came out great. The sound is good. The video, everything's good. So, I mean, that's where I saw it. I enjoyed it. It's like only 10 minutes, but it's definitely cool. It's definitely.
Let's just
cool.
hope it ain't a bummer to where somebody has it and puts it in their VHS or their old, you know, VCR, and then it rips up the tape.
Oh God.
That Some was, people got VCRs, you know, there's not many of them that people still use. And
I just read recently that they're making the last VCRs this month. That's it. After this month, they're not making them anymore.
I didn't know they still made VCRs.
I was told they were discontinued officially about 8 years ago.
Yeah, I thought they were gone.
No, this is the last month. They're officially stopping this month. Or maybe it was in July, but that's it.
No that's more. Going away in the
July of 2003.
Huh. Yeah, they're done. That's a thing of the past, man. That's why I was shocked that they weren't putting the Curse of the Three Terrors on VHS. I'm like, nobody even has
I just took that as like them doing a vintage like nostalgia thing, yeah, like they've done with everything else. It's like, hey, we're releasing it on VHS like they used to back
in the 80s. I just thought the price should have been a lot cheaper than $25. I didn't like that.
That's probably not too easy to get VHS material nowadays.
Yeah.
So you have to charge a little bit more because, you know, it's an obsolete technology.
So what's
I'll give it to Brian Flynn, man, with Super 7. I my hat's off to him and what they're doing. They're just taking it to
a new height. I got a question for you both. Now, I love that retro stuff with the VHS. If you had a choice of choosing between one more retro format to have it viewed on, would you pick Beta or Laserdisc?
Laserdisc.
I didn't know neither one. I was familiar with both of them, so.
I honestly didn't have either or.
Wouldn't you love a big-ass Laserdisc, though? How cool would that be? Wouldn't that be just cool just to have it on?
Yeah, because they only released, I think, two Laserdiscs of the cartoon in the live-action movie, and it looks awesome. I'd like to buy it and hang it up in my collector's room here, but I'd probably go with Laserdisc.
Yeah,
I do own one Masters of the Universe beta. I forget what episode or if it's two episodes, but I had to buy it just so I can say I owned it. I think I bought it for like a dollar or something on eBay, but I don't own any laser discs. But yeah, they only made a select few. There wasn't many that they did make, and I know they did make the movie on it as well.
We're gonna convince them at Super 7 also that we're gonna do some voice work. We're gonna get some old tapes from tape decks, and we're gonna have some story record books, tape books. We're gonna
that'd be great. Like, I mean, that's something cool. That if they could convert that to CDs or MP3s, that'd be great. I mean,
no, it's gotta be on a regular tape, just an old tape that you put in, just like when you cassette tape. That's what we do.
I got all the German tapes. I still have all of them. I mean, I didn't listen to them, but I have them. I would buy them, you know, just for nostalgic reasons.
Well, there we go. We ran it again off topic, but it always goes into some cool little ideas or something. But
that's what we're
so what
for.
Do you say? What do you say, Brian? We about ready to wrap her up?
Yeah. So, Tyler, give your speech.
Well, I said it last week, and I'd be foolish to not continue to the recommendation of Evil Ends Plot. If you haven't watched it, or it's been a while since you've watched it, or you missed a lot of the things we talked about, I highly encourage you to go back and sit down and take about 21 minutes to enjoy one of the best episodes that's always overlooked.
He's talking to you, Larry Hubbard.
Larry, anybody, I mean, everybody that's listening to this show, whether I don't know who you are or not, I encourage you to sit down and watch this episode.
It's definitely got to be on YouTube. You could definitely probably find it on there.
It's available. It's too easy to find for you to not watch it. So I don't want to hear that you got. I got both seasons and all four volumes and this and that, and you've only watched, Problem with Power. I don't want to hear it.
Just go watch that this episode and listen to what we're talking about. I mean, it's a great episode.
Yeah, let us know what you think about it, and
definitely. Let's hear your feedback.
I'd love to hear that, and to keep promoting Thundercats till the crossover comes in. I'm going to recommend The Mountain. It's a very simple story, kind of like Evil Ends Plot, where you've got the mutants duking it out with Lion-O, Panthro, and Tiger on a mountain cliff. And it just becomes, it gets to where Tiger and Panther have to team up with Monkey and then Sly to get out of this avalanche, while Lion-O and Jackalman are fighting over the Sword of Omens down a waterfall, down a river. And it's just a great action-adventure story on a mountain where, I mean, these guys are played up as, like, this is why they're the mutants. And it's just a good like, kind of team-up kind of story, but it's a very simple story, but it's a great action adventure episode. I highly recommend that one.
Yeah, it's kind of like that 2000X episode when Trapjoy and Stratos had to team up. I forgot the name of it.
Similar in tone, yeah, because the mutants do not stick to their allegiance with the Thundercats, so that will go without saying. So those are my two recommendations for this week.
All righty. Joe, your turn?
Yeah, for me, always, like I said, go to the all-encompassing Masters of the Universe Facebook page, Masters of Mythos on Facebook, The Children of Eternity on Facebook, Descendants of Grayskull on Facebook, Vintage Obscure page on Facebook, Collector on Facebook, and there's a new page that my buddy Larry Ho made. It's MOTUC Singapore, so it's a Masters of the Universe Classics Singapore page that he started, and it's a new group. It's a cool page, and if you want, you can search for it and see about joining up. So always check them out, and of course, HeManWorld.com, go there, and I'm going to have to ask Dirt. I want you to pop up here. A lot of fans have been asking where to get and listen to Fans of Power on iTunes. Now, how do they search for it on iTunes?
In iTunes, you have to search for Pop Culture Network. And when you search for Pop Culture Network, you will find it in the stream of podcasts. It is not specifically only for Fans of Power, but you will find it in the list with all the podcasts that we have.
Okay, because I had a lot of fans, they would go to iTunes and they're searching for Fans of Power, so that's not the way to search it. You said you go to search for Pop Culture Network and it'll be correct. Under there on a list of them, correct? Okay, good. Thank you. And that's Dirt, everyone, joining in for a second.
There we go. All right, now it's my turn. So I would like to say go to HeManWorld.com, check out my Facebook page, Masters of the Galaxy. It's an up-and-coming page. We're doing pretty good. Check out the All Encompassing group. Check out all the other pages that Joe said. Check out PopCultureNetwork.com. Check out FansOfPower.com. Go to iTunes like you just instructed how to do to download in case you don't know how to do it the other way that there are. With that being said, rock.
A million times, I don't know why I've never really mentioned, and I don't know if we ever have, but of course on Facebook, you can just go to Fans of Power on Facebook also. There's a page.
So definitely.
I don't know why I never mentioned. I guess it's because we are Fans of Power, and I assume everybody knows, but you can find us on Facebook
We're on Facebook.
I said you can also go to
fanspower.com.
There is a website listed right there.
Yes,
I mentioned that. Yeah, you can go to fansofpower.com. We're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, and we're on Instagram. So we're on all social network. So with that being said, guys, we'll see you next time, and rock on, guys.
Have a powerful day.
You know, I've always wanted to see how good you really are. You're only going to see it once, Stone.
Oh, I know that. I know that. Now, that's from Sidekick, so how about that?
Yeah, Joe got it. Some Chuck Norris there for you people.